The North Carolina House may have the ultimate ace in the hole to stop judicial madness and to reverse extreme injustice. In a closely divided North Carolina, America's ninth largest state, politics has taken a dangerous turn, moving from the campaign trail to the court bench. Little known to the public, four state Supreme Court justices are considering a legal maneuver that threatens the credibility and viability of the state's highest court for decades to come. Two constitutional amendments, 9.6 million votes, and the fate of two duly elected Supreme Court justices hang in the balance. The Wall Street Journal calls it scorched earth judging, writing that if successful, this institutional mischief will reverberate far beyond North Carolina. How did we get here? And where are we going? And will raw partisan politics alter the courts for generations, throwing our constitutional order into chaos? Reported by the Carolina Journal and produced by the John Locke Foundation, I am your host, Dallas Woodhouse, and this is Extreme Injustice. Welcome back to Extreme Injustice. Mitch, we've been talking through these episodes about the possibility of forced recusals, but we started doing some research, and we heard wind of some conversations down at the General Assembly, probably informal. And we started looking at something that I think none of us want to see in North Carolina, but it remains a possibility, and that is the possibility of actually having a couple of these judges removed from the bench temporarily through impeachment. And we reported at Carolina Journal that we know some members of the North Carolina House have at least discussed this informally. Now, let's talk about this a little bit. I think most people are familiar with the impeachment process. We've been too familiar with it in America, in our federal system, you know, with former President Trump being impeached twice and former President Clinton. Neither one were removed by the U.S. Senate because it's a high bar. It only takes a majority to impeach in the U.S. House. That's basically the indictment. It's kind of what a grand jury would hand down. You're charged with, you're accused of. It's done in a formal process. Removal is a separate question. A trial and removal goes to the U.S. Senate. We saw that with Donald Trump, and of course, there was no removal. There was no removal with Bill Clinton either. No removal with Andrew Johnson, if we're going to go back that far.
Yeah, that was one vote short.
One vote short, that's right. But it's a high bar, and it should be a high bar, right? I mean, it should be an enormously high bar to permanently remove somebody from their position that they've been elected to. The North Carolina process works pretty much the same way. It's outlined in the state constitution. It lists some reasons for impeachment, but it has some aspects of the constitution that I think are sort of catch-all, talk about, you know, the administration of justice, you know, do things to hold the judiciary in disrepute and that kind of thing.
And just as a quick throwback for folks to an earlier episode, if you've been listening very closely, you might remember that one of the arguments against the Supreme Court taking action in the way that it's considering taking action now, retired law professor John Orth talked about the current procedure for removing a judge or justice, and he says it already exists. It's the General Assembly impeaching people or the Judicial Standards Commission removing them for a particular reason. So if an impeachment process were to go forward, it is following the process that is spelled out. This wouldn't be legislators deciding to create something out of nothing. This is a process that's already in the Constitution.
But now here is the key difference, and this is a huge difference. There are two aspects that govern impeachment. And if you read the state constitution, you pull it up, it refers to a process prescribed by law. It's actually a phrase that's all over the Constitution. It means we don't put all the details in the state constitution, we put the larger principles. So the state has a has a statute. It has a written law governing impeachments. And it's not just impeachments for judges. It's impeachments for other offices. Not something that's been used. I believe we had one governor impeached, you know, many moons ago. We had a Supreme Court justice impeached around the 1900s, you know, or so. I mean, which is not something we have done, which is a good thing. But the difference is if you are impeached in the North Carolina House, and that would be by a majority vote, which, of course, Republicans control the state house currently. They don't have supermajorities. They can't always get over a governor's veto, but you don't need a supermajority. You just need a majority. If they were to impeach, the statute calls for the immediate suspension of, in this case, judges. In this case, we would be talking about Anita Earls, Robin Hudson, Mike Morgan, those who would move to disqualify their colleagues from the amendment case. And so they would be removed from the bench, and the law says until they are acquitted by the Senate. Okay, and so during this period of time between the end of an impeachment and a trial, they would be removed.
It's a very interesting part of the law. I think it's something that obviously would be challenged if it happened. But yes, that's something that they definitely need to keep in mind. It would be a major irony because if they are removed, it would be because that they tried to remove two of their colleagues from a particular case. So it would be a case of, you know, be careful of what you wish for, trying to get your colleagues removed from this one particular case. If the House impeaches them, they could be removed and it would be indefinite.
That's right. And I think that's a key point and very important, that there is no statutory or constitutional framework of when the Senate would have to conduct a trial. Presumably they could conduct their own investigation. And let's remember here that while the Democrats are attempting to move two Republican colleagues off an important case on constitutional amendments and, you know, some other cases for Filburger Jr., if these Democrats were to be suspended waiting for trial, they'd be suspended from everything. And you couldn't suspend all four because you have to have four out of the seven to conduct business on the court, but you could suspend three of them. And there is no time frame for the Senate to act. They could do a long investigation. And I think, quite frankly, this is an option because if they could just delay it past the 22 elections, you know, it's very well that the makeup of the Supreme Court will change. It'll be more Republican, and they can make all these matters go away. Now, after the break, I'll talk a little bit about, I think there's some constitutional questions about the statute itself. I think it actually goes sort of, I think our professor over at UNC would say that part of the statute is unconstitutional. The removal of justice is before you've had a trial. But until somebody tests it, until somebody says it, they would be removed.
And one thing that's important to note is all of this would throw the Supreme Court into chaos because, as we've discussed with the idea of removing the two justices forcibly from participation in that case, you would be violating the state constitution and its provision that the court have seven members. If you have members impeached and not being able to participate, that also would mean you don't have seven members.
And just as a reminder, they would be impeached and suspended for trial, but the governor could not replace them. I mean, unless they resigned, which they wouldn't do, they couldn't be replaced. And so, I mean, you know, you could see scenarios where we wouldn't even have enough people to conduct court business.
Right. In fact, there was a recent case in which that was an actual consideration. Were there going to be enough justices to hear a case? And it was the one dealing with the retiree health benefits. You looked at all of the justices, and of the justices, a majority, it may have even been five of the seven, had some sort of tie-in to someone who was on the state retirement system. Either their parent was a teacher or daughter-in-law was a teacher or something like that, and they were on the retirement system. And so did they have a conflict?
No.
And eventually, the justices decided, well, this is a big enough case, we have to do it.
Yeah, they actually installed, I think, a motion or an act of necessity. In other words, this is an important enough case, we have to deal with it. Even if there are some conflicts, you know, it's unavoidable, in other words.
Right. So, but you want to avoid that situation whenever you can of not being able to have enough justices to hear the case, because you need to have a court of last resort that makes these decisions on important issues.
Now, let me be real clear about this before we take the break. Mitch and I are not advocating for the impeachment of judges. I actually did advocate for the impeachment of judges when I was at the North Carolina Republican Party on this amendments case, because I couldn't believe at that time they were thinking about blocking the amendments from going on the ballot. I've lived with this a long time. But we wanted to present that it is an option, you know, and I hope putting out and reporting that it is an option, and an option that at least some state House members are considering, that the court will come to its senses. But we're going to talk a little bit about the process and how it would work and how it could actually be utilized on another important case right after the break when Extreme Injustice continues.
Extreme Injustice, an investigative project of Carolina Journal, is produced by the John Locke Foundation. For three decades, Locke has served as an independent, nonprofit think tank that works for truth, freedom, and the future of North Carolina. Locke envisions a strong North Carolina committed to individual freedom, personal responsibility, and limited constitutional government. To support our work, please visit johnlocke.org. Carolina Journal is your source for news and commentary covering politics and public policy. As a project of the John Locke Foundation, Carolina Journal is a pioneer in nonprofit investigative journalism. Our work has exposed corruption, conflicts of interest, and misuse of taxpayer funds by public officials, including members of Congress and the state legislature. Now, our attention is squarely focused on the North Carolina Supreme Court with our in-depth investigative series, Extreme Injustice. Visit CarolinaJournal.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Extreme Injustice. We've been talking about the possibility of the State House impeaching some justices on the state Supreme Court if they should forcibly remove duly elected Republican colleagues for the first time in over 200 years of history on the North Carolina Supreme Court. This conversation actually started in the General Assembly about another case, a case that has been going on about as long as we've had fire on the earth, that being the Leandro court case, which deals with school funding. Tell us a little about that and why those at the legislature would be reaching such an extreme level of frustration.
The very short version on Leandro is this goes back to the mid-1990s when some rural school districts went to court to say that they were not getting adequate funding, and they wanted the courts to declare that state government had to pay more money to fund schools. Well, the case has gone back and forth from the trial court level to the Supreme Court. It's been to the state Supreme Court twice. The Supreme Court has never ruled that the General Assembly has to spend a certain amount of money or certain more money than it spends now on education. But it did rule that every student, as the Constitution says, should have access to the possibility of a sound basic education. And different court rulings have sort of spelled out what that might mean. The case for years and years now has been sitting with a particular trial court judge. First, it was Howard Manning Jr., and now it's David Lee, a retired Union County judge. As the process has gone on during the Cooper administration, Governor Roy Cooper and his team have basically been working through the State Board of Education with the plaintiffs in the case and trying to come up with some arrangement that would finalize this case by coming up with a deal of spending a lot more money on education. They hired a consultant from San Francisco called WestEd to come up with this report of how you would resolve the Leandro that was named after a fellow who was a student at the time that this case started.
He was like a five-year-old. He's now graduated law school, got like seven grandchildren. I don't know how old he is.
I believe he's in his 40s. He's definitely a partner in a major law firm.
Right.
So he didn't get harmed, I don't think, that much by his circumstances. But be that as it may, what happened recently was this San Francisco-based consultant came up with a report that said North Carolina should spend billions of dollars more on public education. The Cooper administration, State Board of Education, all the plaintiffs in the case agreed this should happen. Judge David Lee saw this and said, I think this is a good idea. Initially, when it came to the actual funding of this, which would have to be done by the General Assembly, the judge said, you should work with the General Assembly on this and get some buy-in. But in recent hearings, this judge has signaled that perhaps he is going to order the General Assembly to spend this money. And some folks at the legislature are saying, wait a minute, you can't do that. You don't, as a judge, have the power to order us to do anything. And so that is why this idea is coming up. Is this judge, who's basically a retired judge, this is the only case he's been working on, a judge elected when he was elected from a single county, Union County. I think there are some people in the General Assembly who think that, wait a minute, this is going way beyond what a judge should be able to do. He can't tell the legislature to spend a certain amount of money and how to spend it.
I mean, while there may be some murky parts of the state constitution, there is nothing murky about the fact that the legislature is in charge of appropriating money for programs. And you can think that they should spend more money on education. You might think they spent too much. You probably think it's not spent well. I mean, we at Carolina Journal and John Locke Foundation argue about that a lot, about how well the money's spent.
You might even think they should spend more money, but also think it isn't spent well now.
Yeah, you may think that. But the Constitution is clear that the power to appropriate money rests with the General Assembly. And this would be a usurping of those powers. And I think the legislature absolutely feels a need to protect its constitutional role. And I know that this idea of impeachment has at least been talked about with this Leandro judge. Now, again, if for there to be an impeachment process, either on the Supreme Court judges with the Democrats that would try to kneecap the Republicans or Judge Lee, you know, some things would have to happen. In the Leandro case, he would have to, you know, officially order the court to spend money, you know, hold them in contempt, threaten them to jail them, and, you know, keep it going down where they finally said they've had enough. Obviously, there's not going to be impeachment of Democrat justices if they come to their senses and stop this mess. But if they were to rule and to kick off Justice Berger and Justice Berenger, while at the same time, as we've talked about in previous episodes, liberal Democrat activist Anita Earls, who has the biggest conflict of this, she was the attorney for the plaintiffs, the NAACP. She helped raise money for the NAACP after the trial court had already ruled. If she somehow comes out and engineers this where, you know, they kneecap the two Republicans and the Democrats stay on, this impeachment thing is a process, and all it would have to do is pass by a majority vote, and at least for a time, those judges would be suspended. We're not advocating for it, but we're writing about it. We know it has been talked about. That shows you the level of toxicity and seriousness we've gotten to, Mitch.
It certainly does. And I think everyone involved should hope that none of this stuff comes to pass. I mean, I think a lot of people, as we talked about in an earlier episode, saw the motion that the NAACP filed back in the summer and said, this isn't going anywhere. These guys are trying to throw something at the wall, make it stick, but it's not going to stick. The court's going to hear this case on the constitutional amendments and decide it. Maybe decide it well, maybe decide it poorly, but they're going to decide it. And the only reason this cropped up was that the case disappeared from the calendar, and it became clear, first to you, I think, probably more than anyone else, but certainly once the Supreme Court came out with its order, everyone else, that the Supreme Court was legitimately looking into this, the possibility of forced removal of two justices. And if that never happens, none of the rest of this chain is going to happen. But as you have suggested in your reporting with your column that has the headline, State House Republicans Hold Ultimate Ace to Stop NC Supreme Court Madness, if this happens, the forced removal of the two justices, there could be consequences, and one of them could be consideration of impeachment.
Right. And again, the difference between our federal system and our state system is these judges would be suspended pending trial. Now, I think there's some constitutional questions about that. I've heard that from other people, but it hasn't been tested, and it doesn't look like the judges who would have been impeached would get to weigh in on it. And if nothing else, it might stop anything else. As bad as this would be, it might stop anything else bad from happening until we get past the 22 elections. Think about it from the legislature's aspect, from the Republicans in the legislature. Here, they try to draw legislative districts under very difficult circumstances on rules that have continually changed on them. You know, they're told they have to consider race, but they shouldn't over-consider race. You know, it's the Goldilocks thing, not too hot, not too cold, just right. Nobody tells them what the right thing is on racial, drawing racial lines is. Then a court, there's no indication they didn't do their work in good faith. Then a court for the first time in American history declares an entire legislative branch unconstitutional. A court for the first time, you know, throws out amendments to the Constitution that were not only passed by the General Assembly, but passed by the voters. Now a court for the first time is talking about forcibly removing Republican colleagues that were duly elected by the voters in 2020 while leaving the Democrat with the most glaring conflict of interest on the court. You can see where the Republicans in the legislature are feel a need that somebody's got to enact checks and balances on the court. Now, there are a lot of people, especially on the left, I've been a part of this a long time, Mitch, that don't think checks and balances apply to the judicial branch, but in fact they do, and the North Carolina House may show them that.
Yeah, they certainly might, and I think that there's one good way to avoid any of this, and that's for the state Supreme Court not to take the action that we've been talking about in Extreme Injustice and say, you know, whatever we thought about this idea, the consequences are going to be far too extreme for us to engage in what you have been calling extreme injustice.
Well, what do the attorneys in this case have to say about the forced recusals? That's going to be coming up soon when we present our podcast again to you. Please keep those five-star ratings coming. Please spread this Extreme Injustice podcast to your friends. Let us hear from you on the Extreme Injustice website. I'm at Dallas Woodhouse on Twitter. Thank you for joining us on Extreme Injustice. Extreme Injustice is an investigative project of the Carolina Journal and produced by the John Locke Foundation. It is written and hosted by me, Dallas Woodhouse, with adult supervision from our senior political analyst, Mitch Kokai. Creative design by Greg D. Dunn, with communication support from Brooke Medina. Donna King is the editor-in-chief of the Carolina Journal. Donald Bryson is the president of the John Locke Foundation. And Amy Cook is the publisher and CEO. For this story's latest development, please visit carolinajournal.com and extremeinjustice.com. Follow us on Twitter at Carolina Journal. To support this and other work of the John Locke Foundation, please visit johnlocke.org as we continue to expose extreme injustice.